This is the Everything EV Podcast by EV Powered.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Everything EV Podcast, a weekly show that brings you the latest news, views and opinions from every corner of the EV industry. I'm your host, Charlie Atkinson, and in these episodes we'll be discussing everything to do with electric travel, so whether it be cars, bikes, boats or even planes, we'll have it covered. We'll also be speaking to people from within the industry to get their views on the EV space, as well as other features such as electric car reviews, electric motorsport coverage, and much, much more along the way. This podcast is available on all streaming platforms, so be sure to subscribe to wherever you get your podcast from to receive every single episode as soon as it's released. And please do go back and check out all our other episodes too. For the first episode of 2024, we're joined by Seb Inglis-Jones, the co-founder of British electric bike brand Maving. Maving was founded in 2017 with the mission of creating a retro-style but British-built electric bike with swappable batteries, and Seb is here to tell us all about the bikes and how they are changing the EV market, whilst also providing an insight into the challenges facing the electric bike industry. Well, Seb, yeah, thanks for jumping on the podcast today as well, and thanks for being the first podcast of 2024 as well. It's also a really nice time to be able to speak to you as well, because it gives you, I'm sure over the Christmas and New Year's break, you've had time to reflect on how last year was for yourself and for Maving as a company. So just share your thoughts with that. How was last year? I know we obviously met you at Motorcycle Live towards the back end and we had a little chat then, but for 2023 as a whole, how was it for the company?
Yeah, the one that, I mean, first of all, it was just good to have a break, because last year, I think for a lot of companies, let alone automotive manufacturers, it was a pretty tough year. I think naturally with people having a little bit less money to spend, people were being a little bit more circumspect about buying new vehicles. But, nonetheless, it was a pretty huge year for us. So we grew quite dramatically. We moved into a factory that's five times the size of our previous one. We expanded into 5D markets. So it was pretty exhausting. But when we kind of finally sat back and reflected and had our kind of Christmas party at the end of the year, it was pretty insane when we looked at the list of things that we had achieved. And now I'm sort of calling you from our new factory, and it's pretty exciting. You know, one of the great things about working in hardware, let alone automotive, is being able to walk around a factory and seeing bikes, cars, being born, as it were. And so I'm pretty proud today, standing in this new factory and seeing everything.
Yeah, and I obviously got a sort of first-hand look at all the different makes and models that Maving produces. But for everyone that's listening that might not be too familiar with Maving as a company, can you just give us a bit of an overview of all the different models on your lineup?
Sure. Yeah. So first of all, we're basically Britain's first electric motorcycle manufacturer. We build electric motorbikes here in the UK in Coventry, the kind of the birthplace of the British motorcycle design industry. We currently have two models. The first was the RM1. This is a bike that's kind of fully made for city commuting. The best way to think about it is it's like a 125cc motorbike or scooter. It has removable batteries that you can take out and plug and charge at a standard socket, crucially, which means that you get around this whole kind of challenge of charging infrastructure, which is really the biggest barrier to EV adoption. So the idea being that you just get home at the end of the week, take the battery out and you charge it at a standard socket in your flat or at the office or in a cafe, whatever it might be. The first bike has a top speed of 45 miles per hour, so very much built for kind of urban commuting, 80 miles of range. For anyone who hasn't seen them, they're kind of built to reflect the great eras of British motorcycle design, which is most people think of the sort of Steve McQueen 60s, 70s cafe racer era, but also actually the original bikes of the turn of the century that were looked a little bit like bicycles that have been kind of, converted for the first time with these little motors. So they're very sort of elegant, British, very, very quintessentially British design. And then the RM1S, which we just launched actually at the end of last year, I've got to mention that as one of the big achievements of 23, is pretty sort of similar in design, but importantly, it's about twice the power and it has a top speed of 70 miles per hour. So it kind of brings electric riding within reach of people who might live, outside a city centre and whose commutes might take them on A roads and short motorway spells as well. And that's the bike that we're is going to be hitting the streets this year.
Awesome. It's really interesting to hear you talk about the removable batteries and how you say that sort of combats the charging infrastructure problems. And I mean, I'll hold my hands up. I'm more familiar with four-wheel electric vehicles rather than the two-wheel ones. So, yeah. I mean, so when you talk about, obviously, it's well documented the challenges that the EV market faces, like you said, from charging infrastructure. How do those challenges translate over to the motorcycle sector? Do you still have all the same sort of issues, or is it a slightly different landscape?
Well, it's a slightly different landscape. The reason being, so with a car, when it comes to electrifying cars, you have the benefit of essentially being able to put as many batteries in as you feasibly can within the packaging constraints of that vehicle. So it's no surprise, for example, that the giant SUVs and pickup trucks that are sort of hitting the roads, electric versions that are hitting the roads in the US, have the greatest mileage, because they just, in terms of sheer space, you can pack a lot of batteries on them. And it doesn't matter that they weigh, 2.5-3 tons, because they go 0-60 in, 3 to 5 seconds, because of the torque you can get out of electric motor. In the two-wheeled space, you obviously can't do that, insofar as you can't have a motorbike that weighs 0.5 ton. It's obviously not manageable. So you're dealing with a slightly different set of constraints. And for that reason, you can't really, at this stage in time, with battery density as it is, you can't really get a comparable to an internal combustion engine bike, because you just can't feasibly pack on the amount of batteries that you need to deliver the same sort of mileage. And so for this reason, all the companies that have been focused on building, high power, kind of performance orientated bikes, or bikes that are trying to compete with touring bikes, it's just not really working. You're ultimately creating something which is maybe twice the price of its petrol counterpart and is only really delivering 60 miles or 80 miles of range, and then you have to plug it in. So that's really inconvenient. And I think people are sort of happy with the idea that you might get 250 miles in a car and then have to plug it in. But 60, 80 miles is just not long enough for a recreational motorcyclist. So there's not really the case at the moment for a full-size electric motorbike. However, the other side of the world, the other side of the market, you've got China and Asia more broadly, where they've gone about it in a very different way, which is that they, basically the Chinese government essentially outlawed petrol bikes, overnight in city centres to deal with air pollution. And so how the kind of industry responded is that originally they were kind of basically linking up lead acid car batteries to, old Honda Cub chassis. But fast forward 7 years and you've got an industry that is entirely built around this idea of removable batteries. So you've got more advanced lithium-ion batteries and you've reached essentially 80% electric adoption in the two-wheel world in China. They're selling about 20 plus million units annually, electric scooters with removable batteries. And as I was saying earlier, it's great, right? Because actually most people live in cities. The average commute in this country is about 6.7 miles, I think. For most people, for most of their journeys, they don't need, to cover big stretches and long mileage. So actually having a kind of lightweight two-wheeler that has a battery you can take out and charge the stand socket makes a lot of sense. And it's interesting, it kind of addresses that range anxiety issue, because range anxiety is not really about the range that your vehicle can deliver. It's about the infrequency and inadequacy and the kind of negative experience of charging. So if you're worried about where you're going to be able to find your next charge, that's really the biggest thing feeding into range anxiety. The example I always give here is mobile phones used to have like a whole week of charge, right? And now you barely get through a day without charging. And the reason that people aren't absolutely livid about this is because it's now commonplace to have a charger at work, a charger at home, a charger in your back, whatever it might be. It's our charging habits that have changed, not the capacity of the product, if that makes sense. So that's the sort of big difference really between the four-wheel world and the two-wheel world, and why removable batteries are the best, a real solution to this problem of EV adoption.
Yeah, and it goes back to that mindset as well, doesn't it? That where you said that for 99% of the time, an 80-mile range on an electric bike is fine, but there's always that 1% that say, I want to be able to drive up to Scotland or something, which is always the same example used for electric cars. But like you said, it's for 99% of people,
And like you said, the average journey is about 7 miles or whatever it is. For 99% of the time, it ticks all the boxes, doesn't it?
It does. And I think it's really important for electric vehicle manufacturers like us to be very clear about, you know, what electric can and cannot do for the state. Like we're not telling everyone that you can just replace any petrol motorcycle at this stage with an electric counterpart. But for, as you were saying, for most journeys, you know, there are arenas in which electric makes complete sense. And, you know, it's obviously no mystery that e-bike sales, you know, people are focusing a lot more on different forms of transport, electric push scooters, e-bikes, and now increasingly electric scooters and motorcycles. And it is a fantastic way of getting around for as we're saying, you know, most use cases. And so I think for us, a world in which someone has, you know, a car for long distance, and then more and more people are using two wheels as a way of getting about their kind of daily travel needs is a positive one. And you know, bear in mind, there's lots of countries around the world, particularly in Asia, but also Southern Europe, where two wheels is the number one form of transport. You know, whether you're a kind of 90-year-old granny or you're a 16-year-old, you're on a scooter or a motorcycle.
Yeah. I just wanted to talk about, I've already sort of held my hands up and said that I don't know too much about the whole motorcycle and two-wheeled part of the EV industry, but I just wanted to get an idea of what the rest of the market looks like. Obviously, it was at Motorcycle Live where I met yourself, but there are other brands there, and the likes of BMW, which most people are probably the most familiar with. So I suppose my question is, what I've already asked really is, what does the rest of the market look like? But also, where does Meiling sit within that market? Whereas if you've got BMW at one end, and then, yeah, what does the rest of the spectrum look like?
Yeah, I think so. I'd say that the motorcycle market is, and by motorcycle, by the way, I'm including scooters in that. So motorcycle technically also includes scooters, which is a sort of style category. The motorcycle market is, I think it's fair to say, behind the car market significantly. So I think just naturally, they're maybe, you know, 10 years behind in terms of the way that they're thinking about electric and the kind of importance of moving to electric. I think that's in part because of what we were talking about a second ago, the packaging constraints, you know, some of the limitations of the product you're dealing with, but also because of the customer. You know, a lot of sort of full-scale motorbikes are used for recreational riding. Motorcycle customers, I think, certainly in the UK, the average age is about 53, overwhelmingly male. It's a very different customer to your average car customer. And they're not as interested in the EV transition as your average car customer is. And so, you know, for all these reasons, you basically got the major OEMs focusing on those more traditional customers and those more traditional products. And so when they think about making an electric bike, they think about making a full powered electric bike broadly. So for all those reasons, they're kind of dragging their heels on this electric transition. And then you have completely the other side of the market, which is that Chinese market, Chinese-led market, you know, and increasingly India and a few other countries. But it's really, you know, China is the foil to the traditional motorcycle market. And of course, it's now China that's beginning to lead the way in the electric car space as well. It's completely unparalleled in the two-wheel world. They have had a electric revolution over there. As I say, they've got 80% electric adoption, and everyone is riding around on lightweight electric scooters with removable batteries. What we've tried to do is we've taken that removable battery concept that we completely believe in. We think it's extraordinary that no one here in the West has heard about removable battery scooters and motorbikes, and yet over in the East, everyone is riding them. And they make so much sense. So what we've done is we've taken that technology, but then we've gone, right, look, the UK, one of the things it is truly renowned for worldwide in terms of manufacturing is motorcycle design. So we are going to start a company from scratch, and we're going to use this amazing sort of storied heritage that Britain has, and we've got amazing motorcycle engineers over here as well. So we're going to do this in a British way. So we've focused on design and quality, and we've basically created this segment which is slightly in between, because it's using that removable battery technology, but it's calling upon motorcycle design that people absolutely love in the West. You know, bear in mind that if you speak to, you know, celebrities in America or whatever, and you say, what's your favorite motorbike? If they're into motorbikes, they tend to mention or tend to reference British design. So, you know, Norton, Triumph, you know, these companies will come up quite frequently.
So just going back to when you talk about your customers and the fact that the sort of the legacy and the heritage of the traditional motorcycle market is quite reluctant to make this transition to electric vehicles or to electric bikes. This, I suppose this is a question in two parts, really. First of all, what is your who are your customers or who is your audience? Are you trying to convince petrol heads to go electric? And also, just onto the tail end of that, I was obviously there at Motorcycle Live, and whilst there was a lot of electric exhibitors there like yourself, there was, I did pick up on quite a lot of sort of anti-EV feedback and a few comments here and there. So how do you deal with that side of things, existing in a market that is probably in its majority sort of anti-EV?
Yeah, it's interesting. So I don't want to be to be clear, there are plenty of people in the motorcycle world who are really interested in and passionate about electric as well. You know, bear in mind, a lot of motorcycle aficionados have multiple bikes. You know, bikes are more affordable. A lot of the time they're owned by people who are slightly more passionate hobbyists. So, you know, it's not unusual for a biker to have, you know, three or five bikes. So there are plenty of, we have plenty of customers. I mean, it's, you know, last year about 50-50, who are traditional motorcyclists, and they might have, you know, as I say, three to five bikes, and they see our bike as a really interesting addition to their collection, as it were. So they might have a big, you know, BMW GS that they use for touring, and they might have a sports bike that they use for kind of cruising around the countryside on the weekends. And then they see us as a kind of really sensible daily commuter that is, you know, easy to maintain, easy to manage, lightweight, maneuverable, all of those things that make sort of smaller capacity, lower capacity bikes and scooters easier to ride in urban areas in particular. So we do have plenty of customers who are traditional motorcyclists, but there are, as you've identified from going to Motorcycle Live, plenty for whom a pulsing V-twin, the noise that comes out the back of the exhaust pipe, the oil, the smell, the, you know, all of those things is really important. And we were talking about RBW a second ago. I know that they're really passionate about making cars that feel good to drive. You know, they're electric, but they're really focusing on the drive. And I think it's important that the motorcycle OEMs, including us, also do that. You know, it's a challenge to us to make products that are as engaging as their petrol counterparts. I've also come from a petrol background. I'm a petrol head. I love classic cars, love classic bikes. I totally get the romance around the combustion engine. I do. I also happen to think it's really important that we move to electric to save the planet. So I think, you know, the onus is on us to make really compelling products, basically. Sorry, in answer to your question, as well as those kind of traditional motorcyclists who've really been our early adopters because they're used to them, you know, the motorcycles, they're interested in what we're doing. What's really interesting for us is this other customer who's never ridden a motorbike and you know, never would have ostensibly chosen a petrol motorbike. For, you know, they view us as an EV product. You know, they might have been looking at electric bicycles, they might have been looking at, you know, they might have wanted a Tesla, they live in an urban area, they have a small flat, they don't have a garage, they've got no room for an electric car, but you know, they're fed up of commuting on the London Underground or whatever it might be. And so that's a really interesting you know, thing for us, is seeing these people for the first time be interested in a two-wheel vehicle.
Yeah. And for someone like, when you talk about that, those new customers or someone who's never had a bike, or electric bike or a petrol bike, I mean, I'd probably put myself in that category. I've never ridden an electric motorcycle. I've never ridden any motorcycle in my life. So for someone who has never been on a motorcycle, how do you explain the feeling, or how do you describe the sensation of being behind the wheel of one of your bikes, of an electric, maybe?
I would say I'm biased. I don't think I am. I think anyone who's ridden a motorcycle or a scooter will say there's something magic about it. I love driving as well, it's worth saying. As I said, I've got a Mazda MX-5. I really care about the kind of the feel of that bike. But there's something about, sorry, that car, but there's something about being on a bike. I think when you're in a car, you're comfortable, you've got the heater on, you've got, you know, climate control, you've got a lovely radio. You know, for me, I think about driving as this, you're in this sort of cocoon of luxury and comfort, and you're in control of everything that's going on. When you're riding a bike, it's much more simple. You know, you probably don't have headphones in, you're very engaged with everything that's going around, you can feel the wind in your helmet. It's a much more engaging experience. And certainly when it comes to kind of commuting through cities, there's no, you know, comparable. I can reliably get anywhere in London in about 20 minutes. And I know that it's going to take that time every time I do. You know, there's not going to be a train strike. There's not going to be traffic. You know, you sail past lines and lines of cars and you just think, why is anyone in a car in a city? So I think, and particularly, you know, it was interesting actually, kind of COVID and all of the strikes recently, there's increasingly more people who do not want to rely on public transport. And I do think it is getting more crowded and, you know, a little bit less pleasant. But contrastingly, riding a two-wheeler is just so much fun, particularly when it comes to urban transport. But yeah, I would challenge anyone to give biking a go and then to go, no, it's not for me. I think, you know, you instantly, it feels special and it feels like a much more engaged experience. And I first got a motorbike. I always wanted one, but I justified it to myself because I had this horrendous commute to an office in Slough when I was in my mid-20s. And I had to cycle to Paddington, train from Paddington to Slough, company shuttle bus to the office. And I realized that if I got a motorbike, I would save like 26 days a year in commuting time. That was my sort of rationale. The reality is I just wanted a bike, right? But what was interesting is when I got that bike, come rain or shine, every morning I would wake up and I'd be excited to ride it. And then every evening after work, I'd be excited to ride it back. And that never got boring. You know, there are some things in life which somehow, including food, just remain amazing, even though you do them, you know, you engage with it day in, day out. And for me, riding a bike is like that. You know, I get as much joy from riding a bike now as I did when I was doing, you know, tours around Indonesia with my co-founder back in the day. You know, whatever it might be, it's still as engaging as it always was.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, you've done a good job of nearly converting me as well. It was a good sales pitch. But I mean, as I started this interview, I said that speaking to you sort of in the first week of January gives us a good opportunity to look at the year just gone and reflect on that. But it also gives us a good opportunity to look ahead for the rest of the year. So what does 2024 have in store for Maving? What's sort of some of your big priorities and things you want to achieve this year? And yeah, just your hopes and dreams for 2024.
Yeah, so I mean, I can distill them really into, you know, sort of product and international expansion. So product, the Iron One, I'm delighted to say was a real hit. It was the best selling electric motorbike in this country last year. As far as we can see, it's one of the best reviewed in the world. I think people really warm to it, and so that obviously sets the mantle, you know, sets the standard quite high. And I believe that the new bike, the Iron One S, is going to continue that kind of podium position, I very much hope. I think the fact that it's twice the power and it's got that higher top speed is going to mean that more people are going to consider it an option for them because they live out in the you know, outside of urban areas and need that top speed. So I'm hoping that's going to be you know, make it ameliorable to a lot more people's needs. So I'm hoping that's going to be a big hit. And so that's coming basically from March. That's going to be on the streets. And then it's really just about making increasing our presence in the markets that we launched in last year. So, I mean, for example, we just take the US, you know, we've just launched in the US and we're based in California, and we've had more inbound interest from America than all other markets, you know, put together. I think the US is going to be a really, really interesting opportunity for us. So just watching all of those customers that bought bikes last year and are continuing to buy bikes now, you know, get their bikes and seeing how we can grow our our reputation in the US is going to be a big focus. And of course, France, Germany, Benelux. But I'm particularly excited about the US.
That's all for this episode. Many thanks for listening. And if you liked it, then please do check out all our other episodes. And be sure to subscribe to wherever you get your podcast from to make sure you get every single episode as soon as it's released. For daily news coverage, features and much more, you can also head over to evpowered.co.uk. Thanks once again for listening, and we'll see you on the very next episode of the Everything EV podcast.